Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am Paul David, your CEO and host, and I'm joined today by Dawson Chen, who's the CEO and co-founder of Martin. And we're here to talk about the future of AI assistance. Very hot topic in the news these days. Welcome to the pod, Dawson.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat.
Martin AI is a Y Combinator-backed startup developing what they claim is a more intuitive and personalized AI system that rivals offerings from tech giants like OpenAI and Google. At just 19 years old, Dawson left Yale University to pursue his vision of creating an AI system that feels like you're having your own personal Jarvis. Since launching last summer, Martin AI has attracted over 10,000 early users to its platform, which can be reached through multiple channels, including phone calls, text messages, email, and Slack. Martin AI recently announced a $2 million seed funding round with backing from Pioneer Fund, Founders X Ventures, 8 Capital, and notable angel investors, including DoorDash co-founder. What's particularly impressive is that Dawson and his co-founder, Ethan Ho, built this company from rock bottom, couch surfing, facing skepticism, and pushing forward with limited resources before their breakthrough. Welcome to the podcast, Dawson. Before we dive in, I'm curious, what inspired you to take such a big risk dropping out of Yale to pursue this dream?
Well, I always knew I wanted to do startups. I grew up in Mountain View, and my parents worked at big tech companies. And I think after freshman year of Yale, I didn't really see how 3 more years of college would make me more successful as a founder or increase my likelihood of success. And then I also really enjoyed my side projects during school. I really didn't like going to class. Thought it was just really slow. And yeah, really not for me, the lectures and the PSETs. So when we got funded by YC at the end of my freshman year, it was really a no-brainer. And I thought like this would be a really free way to live my early 20s. And I'd rather be doing this than anything else. So I dropped out in 2023, and I actually worked on Martin for about a year before I met my co-founder, Ethan.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, we'd love to hear those stories of folks who like they you know, jump from the beaten path and they, you know, made something amazing. So you're in good company in the tech community, obviously, for folks who've done that. Before we dive into Martin AI, I'm curious, what inspired you to kind of, you know, leap into the area of specifically like AI assistance? It's very like hot market right now. And as I mentioned, there's big players who are trying to, you know, basically take over all the market share. But yeah, what specifically, had you focus on this area of work?
We've actually first worked on a less ambitious or a less big idea during Y Combinator, the batch. So we were building like a grocery store customer support chatbot for a couple months. And like, we just realized that like, we're like 19 year olds. I was working with two friends from high school at the time. And we realized that we have no domain expertise in like literally any field. But if we were to work on something really big, like building an AI like Jarvis, no one would have any domain expertise because it was so hard. And we're so young, we might as well take a shot at it. That was sort of how we rationalized it to ourselves. Why are we the ones to make this happen? But also it was just like, we knew that no matter what idea we were working on, it would be super hard and super painful and it'd probably take a long time. So we might as well work on the biggest idea that made us most excited. And this idea of Martin, I mean, we've been like big fans of Iron Man, like growing up, we just want our own Jarvis. And it's like the childhood dream of like every boy of my generation, I feel like. So that's why we dove into it.
Yeah, you got a lot of Tony Stark fans excited, you know, by the idea of what you're building. So that's great. And I like this idea too of like working on, you know, the biggest idea that makes you the most excited, because you get up every day, and I can relate to this as a founder, like it's positive stress, right? You're like, you're building something, and you're stressed by this big problem you need to solve, rather than you're like working on someone else's dream or something where it's a saturated market and it's very competitive. So really appreciate that.
And it's going to be competitive and like cutthroat anyways, like no matter what market you're in, I think. So you might as well just pick the biggest, most exciting one.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting though, like, you know, I think for a lot of founders and sort of, you know, startup folks, like that maybe comes naturally to us, but you sort of realize when you get in the game that that's not how everyone operates. And I think for me, that's one of my biggest lessons is, that sort of cutthroat founder mentality. Like, you can't overassume that other people, especially people you hire in, have that same mentality. And you really have to have that humility and that empathy for, like, okay, this person's coming in, it's maybe more about a job or security or a paycheck for them. And how do you build with that in mind and that sort of, you know, empathy as a leader? Have you encountered that yet? Like, kind of the differences in perspective with team members?
Not much so far. I mean, it's just me and my co-founder still. I think we can probably be super lean and only hire people like us, to be honest, for the next maybe year or so. I think nowadays building a startup really doesn't require that much manpower. So we're going to try to stay really lean. But yeah, I can totally understand that. I think, like, we talk to a lot of users and we understand there's, like, a lot of perspectives coming into to building a product and building a business. So we try to stay in touch with as many different perspectives, especially, like, on the user's front as we can, because we're building for them at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think the idea that, you know, this whole thing, like, I know Sam Altman had that, like, very sort of provocative, like, oh, we're going to see the first, like, one-person billion-dollar company, like, that whole idea, like, really interesting to see founders these days focus on, you know, keeping things lean, keeping, you know, focus on building, you know, bringing in a profit, having the team just be the smallest, most focused, most talent dense team that they can have. It's been really interesting. Let's get into the current AI assistant landscape. Want you to paint the picture for our audience about what that landscape looks like and how is Martin filling gaps that maybe the big tech giants haven't addressed.
Yeah, so I would say Martin is the most advanced AI personal assistant out right now for consumers. So we have the legacy, like Siri's and Alexa's. Siri, Alexa, Bixby, Google Assistant, those ones. And they're basically, like, for the past, like, 10, 15 years, they've been, like, a long list of if statements, essentially. And, like, if you don't utter the right phrases and they just, like, miss your audio by a little bit, they can't do anything and they just, like, throw their hands up. And even when they can do things that you expect them to, the capabilities are super limited. It essentially helps you move around your phone a little bit faster. That's the best way I could describe it. Like, there's this feature where, like, you can say, send this picture to my friend while you're, like, on a photo. Which is, like, yeah, it saves you, like, 1-2 clicks. But that's, like, most of what they do. And then we have a lot of new AI companies that are, I think, doing really niche agents, mainly for verticals, but also for email or for, like, to-do list management. Like, they have a super well-tuned agent for a very niche use case. But what Martin is doing is we're trying to tackle all of the things that your personal assistant would do for you and also go deep and be able to do those at the level that a specialized company would. And actually, we think it's not so hard because when you have, like, one workflow agent tuned really well for one use case, it actually applies to other ones pretty well. And once you have, like, multiple integrations all set up and all well tuned, they can work together and it's really magical. So just to give some examples, we are integrated fully with Calendar and Inbox and to-do lists and also texting and calling. So Martin can text and call other people for you. He can also send you briefings, send you reminders, and he can do search, so he can do research for you. So that's like a bunch of different use cases you would think, but they, like, connect really well. So for Calendar, for example, you can, like, text Martin over SMS, like a screenshot of a flyer of an event you want to go to, and you can add that to your calendar. Or you can, like, CC Martin on an email thread and have him schedule a meeting with someone else. And that takes, like, the Inbox integration and the Calendar integration together. Or you can, like, we're also integrated with Slack, so you could ping Martin on, like, a customer support ticket that just came in through Slack and say, hey, put this on my calendar for tomorrow, or, like, remind me in 5 hours to finish this. So we're really about integrating all your tools together and making it, like, one whole, like, magical experience. And I think the eventual dream of Jarvis is still far away. We're still in the early phases, but I think given all the progress we've made with these early integrations, we have the best shot out of all of these companies in the landscape.
Yeah, I love your focus on product and customer experience. I mean, was doing a tour of the Bay Area in January. I'm kind of making this a tradition to, like, get out to the Bay at the top of the year and just, like, you know, interview people and get a sense of, like, what they're feeling coming off of the past year into the new year. And one of the more interesting conversations I had was with a gentleman who he said, your product experience is your true moat, right? Like if you have, like, I think I'm butchering what he said, but like basically having a product that customers love is your true moat, right? And just really focusing on that in the early days. And as you said, like getting that customer feedback, integrating it into your you know, product roadmap and your life cycle, I think is critically important in those early days, because you can do all the marketing and branding in the world. And I say this as a marketing and branding person, but like if your product isn't great, like I can't tell you how many people's products are just crap. And they come to us and they're like, hey, can you market this? And it's like, look, we can do a lot and we're going to take your money. But like at some point, it's like an ethical boundary of like, should I? Because this product is just like not where it needs to be. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, yeah. We're super focused on like customer obsession. Like we sat down like at the start of the year, like when we asked each other, my co-founder and I, like what if we were to be known for one thing or two or three things as a startup team, what would those be? And we came up with customer obsessed and like product focused at the very top of the list. And a few ways we've really done that this year is like, we have all these features that are designed to get more feedback out of the customer. So like if you're talking to Martin and you run into some issue or you try to do something that he can't do, he'll ask like, hey, do you want me to like tell my developers about this? Or you can just tell Martin, hey, can you tell your developers this feedback? And he'll just pass along to us and we'll get a Slack message. And like your email will be there. And then we reach out like within like the same day, basically. So we really try to embrace this like customer obsession, product focus mindset.
Is it? I love the phrase customer obsession. I think some people would maybe be like, okay, is that like a new Silicon Valley buzzword? So like, is it possible to be too customer obsessed? And you know, like, yeah, is that even possible?
I don't think so. I think you can, like, basically the customer's always right and you try to take all their feedback as much as, I guess, like if you're too like unfocused, if you like listen to every customer, it's just impossible. But we literally try to like respond to every customer as quickly as we can, and like within the same day, and like we take all their feedback, like all their feedback goes directly on a roadmap. And I feel like we get so many benefits in return. People tell their friends about us because like these guys, like the developers are amazing, and they love this product, not even because the product's amazing sometimes, but because they're amazed by like just how fast the customer support is. And like I told them to build something and like the next day it was shipped. So I think it is really, really important. It's one of the top qualities that we aim for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about it in like the context of a service, you know, a service business. That's what we are. And like, you know, I think a lot of what we do is like consulting and helping clients understand, like sometimes.
Yeah, even more so there.
Yeah, what their problems are. So I think there's, for us, there's like a danger, and like we kind of have to be kind of like almost like doctors with like our, you know, like it's almost like a doctor patient relationship, right? So I think it depends on your sector. I think it depends on your product, your service. But yeah, it's something I think about a lot is like, as a CEO, I want to default to the customers. I'm like, yes, absolutely, they're right. You know, they bring us the money. But also for my team, they're kind of like, well, we're also the experts in what we do. So it's an interesting one to navigate. We'd love to dig into, you know, Martin as, you know, more about the product of Martin. So if you could walk me through, like, you know, specifically what makes it different to, you know, from other AI assistants on the market, and then like lead us into your growth strategy. Like, what's your strategy for scaling Martin to the next level?
Sure. So right now you can text, call, and email Martin, and he manages your calendar, your inbox, your to-do list, and he can also set reminders, send your briefings, text, and call other people. That's like usually the one sentence pitch, the summary of everything that Martin can do. And I already gave like a couple of common use cases. I guess like in the calendar realm, there's like CCing him to schedule an event. That's pretty typical. In the email department, there's you can set him up to proactively draft responses to all your emails every morning. So you wake up and you'll have like a bunch of drafts that you can go through. That's probably the top use case in the email department. For texting and calling, you can have Martin call someone on your behalf and like achieve a task. So you can have him ask a restaurant for their hours or for a reservation. For texting, like a lot of people use it also for scheduling. So you can have him text like a friend's phone number and like coordinate a time for us to like do something. So that's texting and calling. I guess one special thing to highlight is like Martin is across so many interfaces, so that just like increases the surface area of so many use cases. And also over time, Martin builds like a memory of you, and he'll start to help out proactively. And that's sort of like our long-term goal, is to get him really proactive and get him handling more complex projects over a long period of time. I guess your other question was on distribution.
Yeah, growth strategy. Like, I mean, we're growth partner, with the kind of an agency arm. So we kind of function as like a fractional CMO, but also, we help you execute your strategies, branding, web, all that stuff. And we're just very interested in the different growth stages that companies go through and what resources they're leveraging to help them on that growth journey. So we'd love you just like paint that picture for our audience about your growth journey, if you can.
Sure. When we first started, our main growth strategy was every month we want to make like a big launch or like a big splash. And that for our scale, it's like maybe like 200,000 views, impressions on something. So we did that first on Product Hunt. Product Hunt was really good for us. We also did it on Hacker News. We did it on LinkedIn once. And we did it on YouTube. And most recently, we've been doing it on Instagram. So I was like posting shorts every day and trying to go viral there. So I think for early stage, you can't just like launch over and over again and try to like just like scream and then get views. It's definitely not scalable. At some point, we'll have to work out like more scalable growth strategies and acquisition. Yeah, and we've had some success like doing Facebook and Instagram ads. So that's sort of our early growth journey, I suppose. And then a lot of word of mouth. I think for consumer companies, it's like non-negotiable. You have to get word of mouth or else like you just don't have anything. So working hard on getting virality going stronger and stronger.
Of course, yeah. And then looking ahead, like what sort of marketing approaches do you think will be critical, as AI assistants become more mainstream? How are you going to like sort of stand out in what will become a saturated market?
I think for consumer, again, like it's just like a competition of who has the best, like most viral product. So like, if I love this assistant so much, I'll tell like 10 or 100 or 1,000 people about it. Like that's really like the game changer. So we got to get there. Like there's no shortcut. There's no like marketing hack I think I can do. Like I have to just, we got to get the product so good that you can't stop talking about it. And every time you like, you see a family friend, you see like a colleague, you just have to tell them about it because it's so insanely helpful.
Yeah. Back to that whole point of like, people loving your product is the true moat, right? Like that is the thing. And it's quite like a humbling, I think, lesson for, folks who sit where I sit, who run, agencies, growth agencies, marketing agency. It's like, if the product's good, like it does a lot of the job that we get paid to do. And you just have to take that, So yeah, I appreciate that. Thinking about the product a bit more, like what has been most surprising to you in terms of the way that you've seen people use Martin? Like what made you go like, huh, I never expected that.
Let me think. I guess like every time we come up with a feature, it's usually because like someone tried to do that, but it didn't work. So pretty much all we started with like just reminders. Reminders were our first feature. And people were like, I want them to have like, I want the reminders to be in a list. I want like a to-do list. So we had like lists come out. And then people were like, the reminders should be on my Google Calendar. So okay, let's come up with a calendar notification. So like, I feel like we're very much guided by like our customer feedback. It's not like we had some like very flushed out vision from the start. And even from now, like we know pretty much exactly what we're going to do for the next 3 to 6 months. And like, not one of those ideas was just like thought of by one of us, but we just get like so much feedback from our users because we like seek it out so proactively. So we get like tons of feedback and then we just like rank order and it's like very obvious what to work on. So right now, I would say that, I guess right now, people want more background tasks. This is like a very common request. And a background task is something that runs like in the background that you don't have to like, it's not like him responding to a command. It's like, hey, every morning give me a wake up call on like the news for today and also on my unread emails and my calendar events. That's like a background task. There's also like every morning draft response to my emails or label all my emails proactively. Or like every night I want you to text me a list of the things that I need to do tomorrow or stuff like that. So more background tasks is one request. And then also getting into more complex projects, which is, maybe we'll talk about this later, but this is like our phase three of our sort of like agent roadmap.
Cool. Thank you for sharing that. It's really interesting. Like I like the idea too, that like, features coming from people trying things and, the kind of yearning for functionality that maybe doesn't exist yet, or, just trying to get the product to work in the way they want it to. And then you sort of absorb that and you're like, okay, we should, add this to our roadmap. So, that's really cool. Want to dig into something you said previously in which you described your company as scrappy compared to the tech giants and maybe some of your other competitors. You kind of alluded to this earlier about like staying really lean as a team and, you and your co-founder kind of traveling to keep things really lean so you could just focus on the work and being digital nomads. How does this shape your approach to growth? And what more can you share with us about that scrappiness?
We mostly do everything well. We do a lot of things ourselves that I think other companies would outsource. So if there's a new like marketing thing that we have to do, like I'm working on like paid ads, like I'm not going to like ask anyone else to do it for me. I'm going to learn how to do it from scratch, and then I'm going to become an expert. And that's sort of the mindset that we apply to everything. I think it's really good for founders to take all the like every goal of their company that's like going from zero to one, it should be a founder who does it. And I think if you outsource it, you won't get the learnings from it. You won't like be able to apply the context that you have about the rest of the business to that that new skill or that new department. And so I think that gives us a big advantage. That's one thing. We do everything zero to one. Everything is done by the founders, so we have shared context. And then the other thing is, we're also like because we're so lean, we can interact with the customers even more. Like we're even closer to the customer. Like we do every single customer support ticket. Like if this guy's like payment failed, we'll go and like fix it for you. We'll go cancel your subscription. Or like if you had a small bug on the website, you didn't like this part of the UI. Okay, we'll fix it and we'll like just deploy it for you tomorrow. So that level of customer obsession, like you can't get that if you have like 10 employees or engineers that are outsourced. And you can't get that type of learning from your growth channels if you're not doing every part of the ads yourselves. So we really try to stay in the details in everything we do.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I spoke to another founder on this podcast who talked about personally vetting every single social media post that goes out, you know, in the early stages of the their company. And I think that like as I really look back and reflect, like that's probably one of my biggest regrets is like trying to farm out too much of the work too fast. And first of all, trying to do too much, you know? So of course, if you're trying to do too much, you kind of spread yourself so thin, and then your instinct is, okay, well, of course I need to hire someone to do this thing when that thing is maybe not, it's neither urgent nor important. And then you kind of lose control of your business. You lose control of your brand identity, your brand voice. And so I really respect when I hear, you know, founders saying, okay, I'm going to do most things, see it all the way through. And then when I get to a certain point of quality, then I can hand it off to someone else to do it the way we want it to be done.
Yeah. I think if I were to hire like someone to do our marketing or something, I wouldn't even know what is good and what is bad. So it's like, I'm just like blind leading the blind. But I think we'll start hiring once like we have it figured out, we have product market fit, and everyone is just like coming on to do something that we've already done before, at least in the beginning. So we can trust them and we can fully onboard them.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Cool. Well, it's been great for you to bring us along on your journey and to hear a bit more about the product. Let's jump into our quickfire questions. So these are just like, you know, what comes to your mind initially, a couple word answer, keep it short and sweet. But it's a way for our audience to kind of get to know you better. And they're fun questions. So first question, you know, you've done your thing with Martin AI. If you could found another tech startup, knowing what you know now, what would it be and why?
I don't know if it would actually be a tech startup, but the thing that I was doing before Martin, like in high school, was I ran this homelessness nonprofit where we would recruit a bunch of homeless people and we would like find them jobs at like local, like environmental work sites. So I would basically drive in high school. I would drive like 12 homeless people every Sunday morning to go like plant trees with me because like there's some guy who was like paying people to plant trees. Mm-hmm. I actually think I really like that idea. If I were working on like a nonprofit, that's what I would continue doing. I would probably do something with like the homelessness situation in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I mean it's very caring of you to focus on a challenge like that, because it's really tough in the Bay Area in particular. I remember that from when I lived out there. Jumping back to tech, what tech invention makes you the most excited these days?
Oh man, there's so much stuff going on. I mean outside of AI. There's like a product thing. I guess maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's not like directly on the spot of the question, but I feel like a lot of early 2010s products are getting like rebuilt, or they get like a V2 company is coming in like rebuilding it, and that's really exciting for me. Like we see Gmail. Like you would never think that someone could build a better Gmail, but then there's Superhuman, and I think Superhuman is just like a way better Gmail. Or we have like Google Drive and Google Suite, and then we have Notion, and like there's just new players coming in to reshape everything, and that's super exciting. I think I would love to see like a new version of Calendar, or a new version of Slack even. Like a lot of these things are getting turned upside down. And I think with AI, we can see even more like revolutionary revamps of traditional software that we thought like could never be disturbed. All of those are really exciting.
Yeah, that's cool. I keep hearing about Superhuman. I need to make the leap finally. So because I'm just swimming in the awful UX UI that is Gmail. It's just like, it's unbelievable, but it's free. So, or I guess somewhat free. What's a tech invention that makes you the most concerned right now?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about like image generation or like a lot of the creative stuff with AI. I've never been super into those. And like deep fakes and stuff. We're like very much on the productivity end. Yeah, I don't really know what's going on over there. Also, like a lot of AI companions, it feels like kind of unhealthy, like socially. Like they try to solve the social problem by giving you like a drug, like an AI companion. I really don't think it's the right way to do it. So I guess that and the images don't make me super comfortable.
Yeah, fair. I think the image thing, a lot of creatives worried about the image generation, and also the deepfake thing is a massive, massive issue. It also makes you wonder, like, who's going to regulate this? You know, like, you know what I mean? I feel like we're just heading in this wilderness of, unregulated whatever AI is going to produce.
Yeah, true.
Shifting from AI to the human, who's a literal human in your life who's been kind of integral to your career journey?
So I had a robotics mentor in high school. I built this like irrigation robot in my free time. It was like a Roomba that waters lawns. And I got a huge amount of help from this robotics teacher at my high school. His name is Martin, actually. That's why we named it Martin, as after his voice. We found a voice for Martin and we realized that it sounds exactly like my coach Martin. And he had this like a really soothing British accent. And he was just like very understanding of like people with no technical experience. So I showed up and I was like, I want to build this robot to like water my lawn. Cause I don't know, I just thought it was a really cool idea. And he was like, okay, like he gave me like a ton of information and I had no idea what he was talking about. But we set up like a weekly meeting. Every Thursday I would go into his office and I would bring like all my gadgets, like the robot that I was building. And he would just like destroy me. He was like, you're not doing a single thing correctly. Like everything here is broken. Like you might need to rebuild this part. Like you should go to Home Depot and find like a better version of this drivetrain or something. And like, but like, even though he was very harsh with his feedback, he still talked to me like for like an hour and a half every Thursday. And he was just so nice. And like if it wasn't for him, like, I would have been like so discouraged and I wouldn't have like made it very far as an engineer, I feel like. I still think about all the time I spent with him in high school.
That's great. I love that you named the product after after him somewhat. So that's really cool. I like the origin story. What's an inspirational quote? Does it come from Martin or from anyone else? But an inspirational quote that's kind of stuck with you throughout your journey in tech.
My mom said something that I remember very well. I think it was a few years ago. She's also working on a startup, also like a seed stage startup. And she's like my mom's age. So it's like, you don't see a lot of founders her age like leaving her comfortable job and doing a startup bootstrapped. So it's really amazing. And she said, like, I'm trying to remember the exact wording, like, people usually become who they want to become. And that was very inspiring to me. Like, if you choose a path, if you end up doing something, it's because like you led yourself down that path and you take full responsibility for it. And also, if you want to do something wildly ambitious or impossible sounding, if you just want it enough, you'll eventually get there. It's like it gives you all the responsibility and all the freedom to do whatever you
want. Yeah, it's so powerful. I think the power of persistence and just like locking your mind onto something and just sticking with it. That's something I've realized. Like we're now almost 5 years old as an agency, and I think that's just what separates like the people who are winning a lot of times. Is just like you're gonna focus, you're gonna stay with it even through the tough times. And a lot of people struggle with that change and the ups and downs and stuff like that. But just really sticking with it. But also knowing when to pivot as well, I think is always a tricky one. So
I think that's why you have to find like just the idea that excites you the most, or the path that excites you the most, because otherwise when things aren't going well, and with all businesses things go terribly at one point, you won't stick it through.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Dawson. This has been a fantastic conversation. And I love this episode because, I think Martin AI represents, this like, classic startup story of young founders kind of taking on established giants and having a bold vision and really investing in their product. I think the tech is impressive, but ultimately, it's about making technology that works better for humans and understanding their needs and preferences on a deeper level, which I think you showed when you were talking about, the product not working a certain way, and then you put it in the roadmap. So really great example. So thank you for your time today. And where can the listeners learn more about the good work that you're doing at Martin?
Yeah, so you can go to trymartin.com. That's trymartin.com. And you can start a free trial, 100% free. And we have a guarantee. So if you're not like shocked and amazed by the product, we'll give you your money back after your first month.
Amazing. I love that guarantee as well. That means you have a lot of confidence in your product. So that's awesome. Well, Dawson, appreciate you taking the, I suppose it's like a late call. You're in Thailand. I'm in London, but thank you for taking the chat. And for our audience, please leave a review, give us a 5-star rating. Ideally helps us bring on amazing guests like Dawson Chen, co-founder and CEO of Martin. Thanks again, Dawson.
Thanks so much, Paul. It's great talking to you.
Have a good one, everybody. Take care.